Welcome to the Polycast Christmas Special 2017. In case you haven't guessed, maybe from me introducing, this is actually edition number 3 of Girls Playing Civ.
Hello.
Hi.
Yay.
So with me is Emily, also known as Cardamando to some of you who have listened for a long time.
Hi.
Ayla, who's been a guest before.
Hi.
Willow, who's also been a guest a lot of times, actually.
Too many.
And K-Bear Caddy's around here somewhere, but she's having to poke her computer, so she'll join us in a bit.
It's cool that some of us have been chatting together for 10 years off and on. I think that's fun.
That is pretty cool, yeah.
Yes, I can blame the weekly multiplayer thing all on Willow. She started it.
I did. That was my fault.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
A little bit of history. That was me and James were playing on the weekends and enjoying that. And I started badgering Dan to come join us. And it took a while. And eventually he did and he loved it. Because we weren't playing competitively, we were playing cooperatively. And that's what birthed the whole Saturday thing of playing games cooperatively together. Which is not necessarily how it's done now.
ish.
It depends on the game.
I don't tend to play the games on Saturday anymore, but maybe this game will get me back into it. We'll see.
See if the expansion will pull you back in.
Yep. Civ 4 was very much a farm great people game.
Well, you kind of can do that in this one, because sometimes you just keep getting people and keep getting people. And
that's true.
The thing in Civ 5 is its limits. You know, once it's been redeemed, it's hard to get more and more of them.
Yeah, there is a limit to the pool, so, but still.
But you still can get in that trend. If you're the only one producing a lot of culture, you will get great artists after great artists after great artists.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And we don't have enough building slots to put them in, and so you're sitting there with a bunch stacked in your capital going, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Yeah, you're like, I need another library somewhere.
I wish they had done huge orchestral music again in Civ 6 like they had in Civ 5, because that was my favorite thing in Civ 5, music.
I actually like the music in 6, because what it does is, like, as things build up, your music changes. It has the same theme, but there's new instruments and everything from it.
Yeah, it goes from, it sounds fairly simple at first type of a thing, like you're playing it on simpler instruments, and then somewhere when you get towards the Renaissance and stuff, it does turn into more of an orchestral thing. I can't remember how the modern age is different. I know it's somewhat different, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also nice that your background soundtrack also changes with what civilizations you met. Because when you're first sitting there all alone, you just hear your own Civ's theme. Then once you've met other people, sometimes you hear theirs. And like if you've met China, you'll hear some of theirs. In England, you'll hear some of theirs, you know.
Which I love. I love that. Because it gets a little boring hearing the same songs over and over and over. Like Australia. Well, I will say, though, it is bad if you're too close to your neighbors, because you'll hear, like, Australia's Waltzing Matilda for, like, 300 years.
And then you hear the version of it all the time.
And then you want to kill him just to get rid of the music. And then you kill him, and the music still plays. I want you to know that.
You can't kill Waltzing Matilda.
You can't kill the music.
That's a really good point. That is a good justification for going to war and committing genocide, is to get rid of a song.
But it doesn't work. I've tried.
Well, that feedback should go straight to Firaxis, you know?
Apparently in the atomic age, electric guitars and synthesizers start to show up.
Ah, okay.
I never make it that far.
Oh, most of you just play on the weekend and we only make it about as far as the early industrial.
Do you think they could introduce that in, like, the medieval era? That would be good.
Oh, electric guitars in the medieval era.
Right?
Did I thought there were only guys on the internet?
Yeah, apparently I'm the only woman on the internet, according to the weekend group. It's like, let me count. Yeah, actually, this podcast is all my different internal voices.
Oh, that's really impressive.
We have is from Alpha Shard, and he says, what do you think the new civs and civ leaders will be in the expansion? Will the alliance system allow for co-op victories like permanent alliances in Civ 4? And what do you guys think about the new loyalty system and being able to flip cities again?
I like that they've been working really hard to bring in more female leader heads. They even mentioned that in their news release that they're really concerned about making sure that we have a lot of good female players in the game, which I thought was interesting. It's like they're finally realizing that girls do play Civ. I know.
It's only taken 3 of these specials for them to figure it out.
It's only been 10 years, and yet they can learn.
We strive to have a diverse and varied selection of leaders, and it is also very important to us to include female leaders. Women were often underrepresented in traditional historic accounts, and recent scholarship has revealed more and more of the fascinating, powerful women that live between the lines of the textbook.
I love this, actually. I don't want to say that I'm necessarily a feminist, per se, but I am, in a way. You know, I do really appreciate when they include the women in the game, and they're looking back through those lines of history, kind of saying, okay, who is influencing history that we don't usually talk about, and having the women being more represented. It's just a really cool thing. Now, I think that sometimes it seems kind of cliched. Like, they're like, oh, we need a leader. Who should we pull? And they just pull somebody random. I do, like, appreciate more when they pull in somebody who really was influential, even if we haven't learned about them until recently.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much gender diversity in history, and only recently has there been this attempt to kind of erase female history. And I don't even know where it came from or why. It's not like you can pin it on a particular region or political system or religion, because, you know, not very long ago, we had Victoria and Elizabeth directly from our civilizations now come from England. And yet somehow in our societies, there's this weird thing going on where, no, apparently women never did anything in history. And I don't understand how it happened or who's pushing that agenda.
Yeah, we're literally like, women never contributed to science. Show me all these things women supposedly did. There's a just like long list. It's like even people who should have at least heard of Marie Curie, if nothing else.
And computer science.
Ada Lovelace. And what's the thing? It's one of the wireless technologies. There was a lady that was an actress back like in the first half of the 20th century who was one of the inventors of that, along with being an actress.
Oh, yes.
Hedy Lamarr. There we go.
Hedy Lamarr. That's right.
Yeah, a little bit of a shifting of tides, and it'll be interesting to see. Like, I had never even heard of most of these Civ, and the fact that people are going in and like researching and finding out more information, that it's really good to see.
Some of the discussion that's come out as these female leaders have been announced is people have pointed out, maybe for the U.S. or Britain and stuff, we haven't, in Canada, we haven't heard of them. But in those countries or in that region, this is a well-known history thing. It's just they haven't been brought to big attention. It's like Jadwiga. Poland knows all about this. We didn't. And then suddenly, whole historical thing with her. You know, so they're not just going through and researching for the first, trying to find the first female leader they can find for each given civilization. They're actually looking for ones who had an effect on that country's history.
Yeah.
The
educational
value of civilization remains really, really good. The number of like histories of civilizations and leaders and stuff that I have learned about from this game and that has like interested me in learning more about history. Civilization is one of the reasons that I do the Society of Creative Anachronism now, where I learn even more history stuff. They've never lost that part of the game that it inspires you to learn.
Even with the new Civs, I know there's people that probably haven't realized that places you wouldn't think of had civilizations for a lot longer. It's just something that's also been addressed on the forums, I think, is that sometimes Civ in the past has been a little Eurocentric.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're seeing more of Asia, and we're starting to see some Africa and some of South America. And this is a good thing, because then everybody gets to know these places and they may not have thought to look into before, or thought that you just heard of this place casually and you didn't realize that they had this really long history and have, well, a lot of places have buildings older than the U.S., but you know what I mean.
My husband wrote his thesis on the role of women in bringing Christianity to England and to the northern Scandinavian areas, like the Vikings and the Anglo-Saxons and whatever. And so found that in that research that the women played the highest role in converting those areas, that they were the ones that were convincing their husbands, who are the kings or the leaders or the warlords or whatever, to convert. That was started to change the whole aspect of the religion and the culture of England and that far Western European landscape.
Somebody in the chat is like, wait, we're supposed to be friends with the person sending us the carpet of missionaries?
Well, I guess that depends.
It depends. Have you decided to not do religion in this game and you were concentrating on culture or something? Well, then that's fine. It's an addition. Or the problem I have in most of the multiplayer games is the AI sending a carpet missionaries. And I'm like, you get back on your lawn. Get out. How many times did I tell you stop sending them? Okay, then we're going to do this the hard way. Ask nicely. Well, I know what's going to happen with the loyalty system. It's called trollolololol.
I think it's going to be really interesting in the sense of you could have players who are not so much warmongers and play more of a passive long game that could put strong governors in that and build up their borders and influence that way rather than having to go out and fight.
I just hope it's not quite as flippy as previous times. I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved it.
Speaking of trolls.
Yeah, but it was a little bit ridiculous, and especially in multiplayer, it's like playing Monopoly. It was a great way to lose friends.
I did get into internet slap fights back in Civ 4 when we used to get flipping from that cultural type thing.
You don't like my cultural bomb right next to your city?
I always felt like they should have done demographics. Like, that's one of the things that they mentioned in this Rise and Fall is migrations. Maybe they've done that where a percentage of your population is like, you know, an immigrant or has different religions or that kind of stuff. And so you could see the way that your city's trending, and that could really, if you let it drift too far away from the core of your nation, then it could flip. Mm.
Yeah, as long as they're going to make that transparent for us to see, because that's the one thing I worry about with the stuff in the user interface. Is it going to be like with religions overlay now where you can see clearly how much pressure you're getting from another religion and you know how long it's going to take to flip, so you have a decent enough advanced warning if these people are unloyal and they're going to flip?
Yeah, I definitely think that functionality would be really helpful. You'd be able to see your problem cities right away.
You could also maybe prevent that or go to war with them first, you know, instill their cities first.
Well, that's always a solution, but sometimes we're trying to be peacemongers, you know.
There's no such thing as a peacemonger in a Civ game.
Hey, I play a high religion game, so I like to not go to war and just put everything with influence. So,
which was easier to do, I think, in Civ 4 when you did have things like the culture bombs and you were able to capture more of your competitor's land just by having a phenomenal internal government. Whereas I think in later editions of the game, it's been a little bit harder to do that. And it's been almost more necessary to at least fight some battles rather than to be a full-born peacemonger, as it were.
Mm-hmm. A peacemonger. I like that term.
Technically, for a few minutes, we'll be peacemongers.
I think it's really interesting, that idea of the loyalty flipping. I think that will add a kind of a new twist to the game, make it feel different.
I think, for me personally, the alliance system could be the biggest draw into Civ 6.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. When I was reading the article they sent out about Rise and Fall, I was really intrigued by the alliance system.
Well, one of the big changes that happened with Civ 5, there was no way to win with my friends anymore. Mm-hmm. So we had that, well, it still exists, I just don't get involved anymore. The Saturday gaming, which, you know, started out as Civilization, where we would all connect in and we would become an alliance and we would fight a whole bunch of AIs. And once we defeated the AIs, we won. And it was a lot of fun. And that disappeared in Civ 5. And wasn't in Civ 6. But with alliances, maybe that comes back.
That's what I'm hoping. Even if we don't do this alliances from the start of the game anymore, it'd be nice to do like what we did in Civ 4 is when we got to a late stage of the game, set up a permanent alliance so at least two players could co-op win together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was something about alliances that I saw on a page somewhere where they broke it down into different kinds of alliances, research, military, economic, cultural, and religious. Suggests to me that there's no victory alliance.
So at some point, we're going to have to break it.
This is almost like a research pact, except that you could do it for military, economic, and cultural and religious.
And so military alliance, you'll go to defense against each other, maybe go into war together, and maybe you get a discount on building units for a while.
Certainly defense pacts make a lot of sense. There is the Coalition of the Willing that happened recently in modern times, so an offensive military pact makes sense as well. But unless they allow you to win by having an alliance of every kind.
Unless that's part of the win condition for those victory conditions.
Yeah. I'm suspecting the alliances won't be as much as what I want it to be. I would like them, like in the early game, to be like a mini UN. You get into this alliance and within their sphere of influence, say, you know, an economic alliance, you get to pick policies over time or remove them, etc. And then as you get bigger and bigger onto the larger world stage, things like the UN are essentially a specific form of alliance that encompasses certain verticals. Until you can create permanent alliances that allow you to win. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect this is the area of the game that I will still not be happy with.
Yeah, because I think there's still always going to be that little bit of code in the AI that it's like, you're trying to win the same way as we are, or you're trying to win full stop. I don't like you. And your relationship decays over time, even though you're doing everything right.
Yeah, as opposed to saying, hey, you're trying to win the same way as I am, and I really like you. How about we win together?
Yeah, how about that? We're the same religion. Let's win religiously together. You spread and I'll spread and we'll get everybody converted.
I've wanted that for so long.
That would be really cool. I'd love to see that.
There's this kind of built-in mentality in Civ games of the AI is always the enemy. But, you know, I kind of get to like some of my neighbors in those games and I would like to win with them rather than having to, in quotes, defeat them.
That's crazy talk.
Well, you have somebody next to you that you start out with and you end up being the same religion and you're bros through the whole game.
And you hear their music all the time.
You're getting towards the end game and they're trying to win in space and you're trying to win in space and suddenly you have to die.
Back up or I'll shoot your kangaroo.
Careful, the emu wars will happen.
Yeah, you can lose.
You can't win the emu wars.
Nope.
And I think it's interesting because this idea of you getting bonuses of a certain type from these alliances, because it kind of reminded me what they've been doing with the city-states in Civ 6, where you can...
Oh, the Caesareans.
Yeah, you can get, like, maybe a little bit bonus in your faith or your culture or whatever, based on who you have influence points with. But doing that with the other Civs seems like it'll have a really interesting pull to the game, because you can... then I'll focus on the bonuses you're getting maybe from that cultural or the religious, as they were saying, or military.
A question in here from the forum says, I appreciate the fact the alliances are now intimately tied to your civilization you're allied with. If you break the allyship, though, you stand to lose out much bigger than before. And of course, the allyship is continued, benefits increase. Emergency situations seem like they can be a love-hate relationship, which is, of course, realistic, but doesn't seem like too much of a band-aid of a fix to a runaway civ.
Do you think an alliance will have a disadvantage too? By agreeing to join an alliance, you can no longer, I don't know, have a military victory or something like that.
Or if you try to go to war, you have to get all your allies to agree.
That's probably true. Yeah.
I mean, right now with an alliance, because we do this in the multiplayer games all the time, it just means that if somebody attacks us, I'll declare war on them, but we can declare war on whoever we want. We don't even have to pull everyone else.
That's a military alliance. And there's other kinds of alliances, you know, trade alliances and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Science and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it feels like if you're going to lock yourself into an alliance with other civs, there has to be a downside to that. Otherwise, why would you never not?
Well, the downside is maybe you're limited in the number of alliances you can have. If later down the road you don't like this alliance anymore, maybe it's harder to get out of it.
Like the longer it stands, the harder it is to get out?
Yeah, maybe there's a severe penalty for getting out of it.
Well, things like the UN, the nature of the alliance will keep changing as votes come in, and you might not want to be a part of that anymore.
Yeah, something kind of like Brexit, where now, you know...
The divorce
Everybody
clause.
Hates Britain. Yeah. I mean, that's really been a negative thing for them. That may happen in Civ. You never know.
I think that's analogous to losing the advantage of the alliance. You know, so it might plus 10 to your economy because it's such a huge trading union. And then by leaving it, you lose that bonus.
Yeah. I mean, that would just be a natural consequence, right?
But I wonder if you leave it, it's not just a bonus. It's like, say, you know, like with the whole NAFTA thing, if US pulls out, the Canadian dollar is going to drop. So it could be like if you actually leave that alliance, you're not even going to be neutral. You're going to be in a negative.
So everybody's going to want to declare war on you. Yeah.
Because you're in a weakened stake.
I'm really nervous about Canada declaring war on the US for that very reason. Anyway. I think this comment mentions the emergency situations and wondering if there'll be too much of a band-aid. I don't think so. I think there'll be a new kind of challenge because you're going to have to decide whose side you're on, right? And if you all band together against this one person, you either all get that bonus or the person, I don't know, what are they calling it? Like the target will either get all of the bonuses. So I think it'll be just a fun challenge. I don't think it will necessarily fix it unless you play it really well. I think there's still a chance for the target to come out on top in that.
I'm curious if it's kind of like how in Civ 5 you had those projects.
Mm.
You have to put some sort of like...
I think like the Olympics
research.
And stuff.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying.
City production towards that project.
That would make sense.
Well, they talk about civilization launching its first nuclear weapon being an emergency or converting a holy city to a rival religion. I was just trying to imagine other things. Maybe a plague could be an emergency.
Mm.
Do you remember when SARS happened? It was planet-wide shutdowns of airports and stuff for a weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the actual video, it's the Black Plague. Like if you look at the Rise and Fall video, it was the Black Plague. So it could be different things like that, which could be quite interesting. Depending on the emergency, it could be affected by maybe you lose population.
Depending on how much you put into the emergency, that mitigates how much population you can lose from this. So if you ignore it, you're going to lose a lot. If you put a lot into it, you might only lose a couple of pop.
Do you think this might link into natural disasters? So if there is a volcanic eruption and then a large chunk of the population of nearby cities is going to be lost, and that's over in somebody else's nation, you can give them money to deal with that. And so that's going to cost you over many years, but they're going to be very, very happy with you.
Mm, that makes sense. Yeah, because you could have volcano, you could have hurricanes. Like in real life this year, all the money that's gone to Puerto Rico after they got hit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it'd be interesting to see what the designers do with this, because I'm just, as I'm reading through everything in this expansion, it feels just like a brand new game.
Yeah.
Like a cool one, but just totally different.
Guesses on Civs that we might be getting? Like personally, I'm looking forward to seeing if the Shoshone come back.
We can have them land grab more.
I love this.
That seems like a far-flung fantasy. Like I think it was amazing they made it in to begin with, but
or the Celts. I'll take either.
Yeah, we haven't had the Celts in a while. I think we all kind of really want Genghis to come back. There's Mongolians in the cutscene thing in their video, so I'm like, come on, you can't tell me there's not Mongolians now.
True. I think they probably do need someone else from the Americas. We've got, we have Montezuma, which is, you know, everyone's favorite. And
Brazil. And Teddy. America. Yeah. Where's Canada? Where's maybe Argentina or Chile or somebody?
Yeah, I think there's room for maybe one more American Civ, you know, in there.
Mexico, maybe?
That would be interesting.
Well, we've had the Maya previously, so, you know.
Yeah.
They're pretty big.
I really don't know how a Canadian Civ would be made. Like, we're not a warmongering nation. We'd be somebody with, high diplomacy, maybe.
Yeah, but they had a destroyer, so.
Yeah. If they can do Australia, they should be able to do Canada at this point. Come on, guys.
That was just funny.
I was, 1,000% not expecting that, and then that happened. I'm like, you're kidding.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who else could be in there? More Asian? They announced that we'd have, 9 leaders and 8 civs. So does that mean someone else is going to get a second civ leader?
It would be good if somebody else other than Greece had a second.
Yeah.
Which Greece are you?
I was trying to think of who they're more likely to put in. I don't know. Maybe England or America. They always seem to have a second leader head.
Hmm.
There's a question from Canis saying what leaders should be added to existing civs.
This I've been trying to figure out if it's 8 civs, not, or is somebody coming in with 2 civs, or are they adding one? And I've been trying to think about that, but who are they adding to, if anybody?
Maybe China.
That's true. They could get Qin back in there.
China's got such a huge history of someone trapped in these games.
Yeah, because there's Wu Tang as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Norman was asking about what we thought about them picking the Korean leader, because a lot of people were going, oh, it's another female leader. Well, she's legitimately a good part of the Korean history is what I understand. So I didn't understand why everybody was so upset about that. It's maybe one female leader probably in this entire expansion, maybe 2 if we're lucky. And you guys want to get upset over the one who actually has some good historical background? It's like being upset over Victoria originally. Victoria is a massive part of English history.
People will get upset about anything.
Yeah. It's a Kelly.
Like me connecting. People will get upset about that.
Hi. There she is. Hi.
There was a question for Northern Lights. I wonder if we would see somebody more modern civ leader, like Merkel for Germany or something like that.
I don't think they're going to do anybody contemporary, only yeah, because so the politics far. Involved in them. Yeah.
It's hard to yeah. say what their achievements are until they're done with the job. Mm-hmm. And but how they, that ranks up against other people who have done the job in the past.
I don't think they've gone past World War II.
Yeah. That's where we're at. But that's still, you know, within 60, 70 years, right? So fairly recent history.
Yeah, I suppose they could go for somebody from like the 70s or something, or maybe even the 80s, because they've been out of office or what long enough to have history evaluate them. But I just.
But there's still a lot of politics around them. Like if you think about like pulling Reagan out, you know, as oh, a, God. You know what I mean?
A little.
Right? There would be like, you'd lose like a good portion of your players. I don't think they're going to do anything that will risk really super like, alienating any of their current players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems even besides that, it's scary to do somebody who's still alive because you never know what they're going to do next week or next month.
Oh, yep.
As a leader, the challenges you face in the start of the 21st century are pretty different to medieval times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. There was another question from the chat from the buzzing. Is anyone else noticing a pattern where Civ games launch with mostly militaristic options and expansions gradually add more non-militaristic options? And is that the core game experience being based around military, or is that players just stick with trending towards non-militaristic?
Well, I think Civ 5 was definitely military, right?
Very military.
Like, you can't argue that. It was all military and none of the extras were added till later. Mm-hmm. I think 6 started out a little more balanced. At least.
6 felt like a full game, whereas 5, after 4, 5 felt like so much was lacking.
Yeah,
5 really didn't come until its own, until the second expansion.
Yeah. In fact, I didn't enjoy playing the original Civ 5 at all. Whereas I love Civ 4 because I felt like there was more of variety in how you played the game. And Civ 5, I felt like all I could do was be at war the whole time. And Civ 6, I'm actually really enjoying again in the same way I enjoyed Civ 4. So I think Civ 6 is less militaristic than Civ 5 was. And I think that's a good trend. I think it's good to be balanced.
I do like in the fact that the Rise and Fall expansion is like bringing things in like emergencies or like the Dark Age and the Golden Age. Like it'll be interesting to see how those play out. Great Ages. As you move between historical eras, you can trigger Golden Ages or Dark Ages or neither, depending on how successful you've been in the preceding era. Each provides its own challenges or bonuses. Rise triumphantly from a dark age, and your next golden age, you'll be an even stronger heroic age. So yeah. From that, I think that's like, even if you fall behind at some point, you might actually, if you do well in the next one, you could come out in front.
Yeah, and you could deliberately slow yourself down with a dark age for a massive expansion afterwards. In a heroic age.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like slow stuff down, mostly build out some cities or something and slow your research and stuff down. So you sort of dark age and then you get the golden age and then the heroic age because you pulled out of that dark age.
Yeah.
Slingshot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the dark ages were very much a desire to not change anything, to be incredibly conservative and redefine their identity. And then when the Renaissance hit, everything was changing again.
Yeah, the emergencies are really cool. That feels like a whole nother game to me.
Feels like we're playing SimCity.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like it almost seems like a separate like mod pack or scenario pack or something. Like, and here's emergencies that you can trigger if someone is playing too well. You shake up the game a bit.
I think it's a way of leveling the playing field out.
Yeah, and make your games more fun as they go along. I think so often we don't want to finish our games because they start to get so predictably boring in the modern era or whatever. At least mine do. I don't know about anyone else's, but that's kind of my MO. I don't finish my games. But with something like this, I might.
Yeah, because we have that problem even in the multiplayer game on the weekends, is that we get to a point where technically we know we've won, but it would just be another hour or two of doing the execution of going through the whole, we have to do this, we have to do that, we have to get rid of this thing. We know between all of us human players, we have enough to crush that last sieve, but it's 12 a.m. Can we all go sleep now? Mm-hmm. And you have that problem in single player games too. You get to a point where you know technically you've won, but it's how many more hours of click, 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 click.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to spice up the clicking, that's good.
I wonder what they really mean by Dark Ages, because the Dark Age really wasn't dark, and it only happened in Europe.
Yeah.
Golden Ages make sense, and we've had them in several versions of Civ.
From the buzzing, it's like Civ needs to have some kind of catch-up mechanic. And I think that's what they're trying to do with the Golden Ages, not have a Golden Age in one and then get it later. And it can help you leapfrog forward, is from my understanding of that mechanic.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, it could be annoying in multiplayer.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated by the migration stuff. Because if disasters, then will that trigger mass migrations?
Absolutely. I'm sending my people to your city, and you're going to take care of them. Just kidding.
That's the culture bomb.
Well, you know what the next step is you build a wall.
What else? Well, we haven't talked about this yet. It's actually the thing I'm really excited about. They're adding achievements back in, or they're calling them historic moments.
Yeah, the timeline.
Because this is cool. I'm really excited about this because I don't know if anyone else has done this, but where you circumnavigated the globe and you're like, ta-da, and there's nothing there. And you're like, come on, this is a big deal, guys. And nobody cares.
Circumnavigated. Where's my plus one movement?
Nobody cares. That,
do you think it's samey, though? A few games, the timeline's just always going to look roughly the same?
I don't think so.
I think it depends. I think in multiplayer, it could probably be a lot more varied. But yeah, I think in the, like, if you're up against an AI, then it might turn into a little bit samey.
I guess it depends on if you play the same game every time, right? Are you playing the same way every single time?
Guilty.
I try not to because it gets kind of boring. But some people do. And if you play that way, then it's going to look the same. But does it matter if you enjoy playing that way?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to shake it up, you can easily shake it up. You know,
I guess you could challenge yourself. Like, can I do that thing earlier in the game if I change the way I play a little bit?
Yeah. Like the people
what
that
does
play,
that do to history?
The people that do the settler space race things, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think you can always challenge yourself some way, but I love that the game will still recognize that you'll get bonuses for being the first person to do something. I like that because I always like a good party and I always like a good reward.
The historical moments increase your era score, which then help you get the golden age for the next era.
Okay. Yeah.
The question is the AI aware of that, though? Because that's been a problem, I think, in other things before, that the AI doesn't necessarily know that it can do that or doesn't prioritize it properly.
I found the AI smarter in this one version than over 5. There is times where they surprise me.
Every expansion for every Civ game has always left the AI in the dust, though. They put a lot of effort into the AI for the core game, and then they add a new mechanic, and then the AI doesn't really know how to use it.
The buzzing brought that up about the emergencies, too, that it'll be interesting to see how the AI treats those. If they end up being just a penalty for being human, that'll be disappointing, but we'll see how that turns out. Hopefully the AI will deal with them properly and it'll be good. We'll see.
Those dang humans.
I know.
They ruin a perfectly good game every time.
We haven't touched on governors yet.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So this is going to be interesting because it played Stellaris. Have any of you guys played Stellaris?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've had much experience with their governors, though.
Basically, you assign somebody as like your overseer to that city, and they'll give positives or negatives to the city. So like one could be a growth bonus, or another one is like they have a calming effect over the city. So maybe they're happier for longer, or there's like increased productions and stuff like that, or border growth.
Do you think they'll pass away? Or will they just stay there the whole game?
Well, knowing Civ, they'll probably stay there the whole game.
I guess later age governors might have bigger bonuses, which would give you a reason to retire them.
Mm-hmm. Or if there's the ability to swap them around or not, or if it's a lifelong position.
King Chris 20 suggests that they might be a mix of great person or spy with decent benefits from great people. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And maybe you attract them based on what you've built in a city or inspire them.
Mm. So maybe it's like a great person that it pops up only once you get access to that person, once it built it up enough that they're like, you know what? You're worthy now.
Yeah.
I could help you with that city over there you're having trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it'll be linked to education, maybe? No, governance never has anything to do with education. Sorry.
Well, they'll link it to something. I don't think that we have expanded enough in an early game, so it probably Renaissance-ish era somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it also ties into their influence can help take over other cities and affect the borders and stuff like that. So that'll also be an interesting mechanic.
Also, like historically, they used to take strong leaders away from the capital so they wouldn't upset, you know, and try and overthrow them, but put them out on the frontier where they could help, or with a troubled city that was on an aggressive border where they could help bolster that and the enemies wouldn't be as likely to come and attack them.
Yeah, a good governor back in the day could take a dusty little town and turn it into a real city.
Mm-hmm.
Just get that guy to my capital before he throws me over.
Pretty much, yeah. It was all about that untapped potential of some sort of resource or situation that, with the right kind of leadership, could actually be really good for a country.
Yeah, so on the site here, it's like, governors recruit and upgrade powerful governor characters with unique bonuses and promotion trees, then assign them to your cities to bolster their output and reinforce loyalty. So I'm wondering if there's like a training part. So maybe it does tie in with education.
Hmm.
And loyalty, which is a little bit scary. So if you're if you don't pay attention to your city, because it sounds like if you imagine every time your city grows in a population, you unlock another advancement for governor. So the bigger the city, the more governor advancements. As like a newbie player who might not necessarily pay any attention to that, they would get really screwed.
I left the city over here on the frontier and I got distracted by war. Why did they flip?
So are we all really excited for this?
Yeah, I'm totally stoked for this.
I am too.
Yeah, it should be a fun game.
It'll be cool.
Yeah, it's a bunch of different things to change it up a little bit, just in case anybody was getting bored of any sort. Just like, not really, haven't figured out how to play with all the civs yet, so I'm not at the board stage.
From the input requests, somebody was asking about modding. They had this opinion that something's happened to modding since Civilization 4. Back then, we had a set of fantastic turtle conversion mods, Rises and Falls, Fall from Heaven, Final Frontier, and tons of scenarios. You know, someone replied to this pretty quickly saying there's 900 plus mods in the Steam Workshop, 988 in the last 90 days that have been trended. That's a lot.
Yeah, but I think the difficulty in development's gone up too, is the thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, Civ 5, really, I think a lot of the mods were pretty darn trivial. And actually, a lot of the DLC for Civ 6 is just basically being leaders. And that's kind of a little bit scary. But Civ 6 does have a pretty vibrant modding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking at it, like, there's a lot of, like, city-state packs and stuff like that that's come out for AI. And I haven't had the time to play with the mods. I'm still trying to work out all the base game.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, I did some modding for Civ 4 for our Saturday games right near the end of the Civ 4 lifetime when Civ 5 was just about to come out, because I was getting a little bit sick of the way the game was being played. And we changed it so that even units that are damaged had full combat strength still. And that changed the game immensely. And we played it once or twice and it worked really well. But it was more approachable back then. I think that a lot of the modding now is easier to do when you're not doing the programming side of it. It's harder to do if you're doing the programming side of it. Whereas in Civ 4, it was the other way around. It was easier to do the programming and harder to do the non-programming bits.
Yeah, and because of the way the art's done, back with the Civ 4 mods, it was a lot easier. And even with the Civ 3 and 2, it was easier to put those art assets together. Something with the 3D switch is what happened. And there's not as many people who are as good at 3D art as there are at the flat 2D art, which you could do before.
Yeah.
I think with Civ 5, I brought up the map editor one time, was trying to use it. And like, I would take a while to learn how to do this and make even just like a single custom map if you wanted to do a scenario, much less if you wanted to try and do your own map script to generate, especially if you start adding new resources and things in.
The Buzzing says the capability to mod it is extensive, but it wasn't there at launch, and the work involved in a large mod is really beyond a single person. That was true in Civ 4 too. I don't think that's changed. It took them a while to bring out the modding API and the source code to actually write the stuff as well.
And even something like Fall from Heaven or Rise and Fall, it took them years to get it done, even if it was just like one or two people, you know, one person with some help or something like that. Features we want in Civ six that aren't announced.
It depends on how much Rise and Fall adds what I want it to add.
Yeah. Ask us again after the expansion comes out and maybe we can tell you.
I think we've thrown out a lot of our ideas of how we'd like to see these different features used. We don't know how extensive any of these will be.
It feels like a pretty big update to the game.
Yeah, it's one of those things like when we've had the big expansions before in 5, it's like we have to actually get the expansion and play it for at least a month or so, and then maybe we could see if there was anything that needed to be improved or if there was anything that was missed. Because there's some things that are already in there, like trying to have different kinds of alliances, which is something we've wanted to have. We'll have to see how the Golden Age, Dark Age, Heroic Age thing goes. Because everything sounds good right now as they've presented it. How it's actually going to work when we sit down and start playing the game is another thing entirely.
I really want them to expand out barbarians to not be barbarians.
So like they grow into something?
Yeah, yeah. They, you know, they're just people who have names and maybe they'll settle down. Maybe they won't. Maybe they like you. Maybe they don't. But calling them barbarians is so Roman.
Have a camp and it sits on a site for a long time because nobody's dealing with it. Why can't that evolve into a new city state?
Why can't they get loyalty bonus, like a loyalty thing for that closest civ, and just grow into a little village? Doesn't that make sense? I think
there was a really interesting paper on the history of the Roman Empire, and they tracked the known historical moments, combat with, you know, quote unquote barbarians, to the printing of gold and where that gold came from in the region, because they could track where the gold actually came from and found that the printed coins matches up almost identically with conquering neighbors, essentially. So this propaganda of calling them barbarians is a huge injustice to history. I would just like it if they got rid of that name and did more with them.
Yeah, I think they can be our barbarians for the first couple of years, but after that. I think if they can build swordsmen 50 turns before me, they can develop into a functioning society.
Yeah, and how are you different, really? You were just a bunch of settlers who decided to make a city at the start of the game.
We're just civilized barbarians ourselves.
Yeah.
Even in the original Civ, they actually built their own cities or would take over a city and start producing more units like they were a Civ.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently that also ties into some of the loyalty system, where if your city is low loyalty, it can become a free city. Mm-hmm. So it breaks off.
To conquer it? To take it back?
You could probably influence it to come back, or somebody else nearby to you could influence it.
Do you think it becomes essentially a city-state at that point?
I think so.
Quasi-city-state, because if it's a city that's on the backside of your empire that's not loyal to you, it's going to go into that free city type of thing. And there's nobody around to influence it to flip to another civ. But if it's on your borders and it flips, then it can become part of another empire.
Yeah, that makes sense. That explains flipping too.
Yeah, it's not the traditional old sit there and pressure. It's just you better treat them good or they're going to flip.
Yes.
Oh, no. Yeah, from the article, keeping your cities not loyal not only keeps it on your side, but also emanates its loyalty as a kind of peer pressure to other cities nearby. You could even sway cities from other civilizations to join you.
Look how awesome we are with all our watchers. Don't you want to join?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. You're starting to see how this is going to be trolling.
Yep. And that's where you need the option to turn off loyalty city flipping as a setting when you play multiplayer.
That's got to be an option. We can turn other things off. Please let that be an option to turn it off. You guys have got a few months to work that out. Wouldn't think it'd be that hard to turn off that rule. So we turn off all of our victories, so...
Yeah, it might just be another set.
Oh, the Golden Ages and Dark Ages were kind of a loyalty bomb. Whoopsies.
Oh.
No. Oh, no.
Uh-oh. I mean, on one hand, yeah, I got a Golden Age, but oh, if you're trying to go through the Dark Age to get to the Golden and the Heroic Age, that could be tricky if you have a strong neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some of these features are going to be less desirable than others.
Possibly.
Oh, the buzzing brings up a good point. It might be that you can't be influenced unless you're failing to manage your own cities, i.e. if your city is in revolt, it can be influenced, but if your cool neighbor won't make your city revolt.
Yeah, if you're like cities at least got the minimum amount of amenities it's supposed to have and stuff in the housing, then they'll be fine. But if you're short on the amenities and housing and not managing well, then they start to go, that looks nice over there. I like what they have.
What if your neighbor's half an era ahead of you Are they satisfied by what your standards are meant to be or by what other people have?
Good point. The Golden Age Dark Ages are among the new events that can shift the course of your game's history. They're significant but temporary changes to a civilization that lasts for an era. And then that's the era score, yeah.
Things will now come February. We need to see this in action to really judge on this one. Question put in by Morning Calm on that thread over at COC that was, have you ever found the Civ 6 AI to give you a combat challenge or employ interesting tactics that surprise you?
Yeah, when I, you know, ally with Valletta and I'm at war with another Civ and they troops don't do a lot. They just kind of stand around outside the border. But all of the AI divert their attention to those little sword swinging people over there and they don't do anything productive. That surprises me.
Yeah, they tend to focus on the city state units more than your own units. Like, I'm sitting here surrounding this big city of yours. You might want to fire at me a little more. I mean, on the other hand, I'm glad you're distracted, but
it's like, I'm going to go over on this side.
Is this a question of they accidentally did something good? Not
well, interesting.
I mean, they do dumb things all the
interesting
time.
Interesting
right?
Is not necessarily good or bad. It's just
yeah, it's just interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how Morning Call meant it, but that's how I'm reading it.
The thing that's always surprised me is when the AI cheats and you're crushing the civilization and it was just outproducing you anyway. Which doesn't really happen in Civ 6, but it happened in previous Civs.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like difficulty shouldn't just be, oh, lump a bunch of bonuses on the AI, that the AI should present a real challenge without bonuses. But it's a pretty hard game to make a smart AI for.
That was one of the biggest gripes, actually, for my boyfriend, is that once you get to a certain difficulty level in previous versions, it's like you just, it's too hard to win because the AI cheats all over the place.
You really have to cheese the game to beat Deity in certain configurations. So I don't expect that to have changed.
Yeah, it's always like it's been balanced around that medium level and then everything outside of it is just pluses and minuses to the AI. Their production gets nerfed if you go to an easier level and then they get bonuses if it goes to a higher level.
Mostly I get surprised by dumb diplomatic decisions by the AI. And that's usually driven by this hard-coded desire to win because there's no way to win together.
The whole, we were friends, but now we're doing a different thing and no, to heck with you.
Yeah, we've had thousands of years of peace together, but you know what?
I want to win,
I hate
so
your face.
Get wrecked.
I hate your face and I want your stuff. And the game tries to force humans into making that decision too, where, well, if I want to ever end this game, I guess I just have to go to military and hate your face and take your stuff.
Well, honestly, I just don't like how they completely spam the, like, I denounce you. Okay, we'll do something about that. They constantly will pop up being like, I do this and I do this. And I'm like, okay, well, I know my military is weak, so just back off.
Cleopatra in particular. It's a nice army you don't have there.
Why can't you punish them for such warmongering when you've got a neighbor who's going, oh, your army's pretty weak, or I've got a big army. And you should be able to turn around to your neighbor going, hey, you know what they said to me? They won't stop with just me. They'll attack you next. How about we have a military alliance, huh?
Because combined, our military is as strong as theirs.
I'm not expecting that level of sophistication.
Yeah. It would be nice if they stopped popping up with deals. They'll send you the deal. Here's a couple of artifacts in this. But no, I don't want this deal. Why did you propose the deal?
Yeah.
I do find that like they can propose the deal and you can totally low cut them so easy. And they'll still take it half the time.
I don't know. That depends on who you're dealing with, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think probably because I push religion out to everybody and make everybody love me, that maybe that's why I do it. Why I can get away with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what's going on there. I wish it were a bit more complicated in that there are needs and wants. So when it's a need, yeah, I'll let you undercut me. When it's a want, I'm just trying to see what kind of person you are and have the AI kind of tally up what its opinion of you is that way.
Right, right.
It should be offering you stuff that you say no to and then noting that as, I gave you a bad deal and you said no, or I gave you a good deal and you said no. One is an indication of intelligence. The other one's an indication of you don't like me.
Yeah. You wanted this fancy luxury for a zillion gold per turn. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Then turn out for one gold per turn. I was like, don't want to get a deal with you. I'm about to go to war. No, I'll pass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a valid tactic in civilization. You make a really nice deal with someone and they turn it down, then you know that they're thinking about horrible things towards you. Mm-hmm. And you might want to get into a military alliance against them, or you might want to just attack them or something along those lines. And the AI could be thinking that way too.
Question here is, what habits did you form while playing Civ 6 games? And do you prefer to play particular Civs on particular maps or particular map sizes?
Ooh, that's a good question. I found that I like playing Egypts when I'm playing against human players that I'm not as good as, if that makes sense. Like, if I'm not as good of a player as them, I like playing Egypt because they have such good gold. I just get so much cash flow from Egypt. And it doesn't really matter if I'm not as good as my competitors because I can just bankroll stuff. So I've picked up a habit that if I'm feeling like uncomfortable or seriously unmatched, I will play Egypt with Civ 6, which is an interesting thing. I don't know if they've picked up on that yet, but
well, then we'll hear this for a little bit. So
I just tried playing the Khmer, which I thought was actually really fun. So I might play him for a little while while I figure it all out. But it's got cool mechanics for that Civ. Especially because I play a religion game. So there's that.
Yeah, because it depends on, you know, particularly with the map types. If I know we're about to go play on an islands map, well, I'm going to sit there and pick a Civ with good ships.
Yeah.
Because there's no point in me sitting there and just playing some. Don't play India on the water map because the elephants are not going to help much if you have to boat the elephants.
I found that I've picked up the habit of playing everything on really small maps with online speed, just because I think the games can go so long.
Forever.
Forever and a day. And there's some people that like to put a super huge map into Marathon, and, well, we'll see you next year when you're done with that game. Gosh. I mean, I get that, because back when I was first playing Civ and stuff, it was nice to have a longer game, but sometimes you actually want to see the end game in the same month.
Mm-hmm. I do admire those people who do the, you know, 20 AIs fighting each other and then record everything on Reddit.
Oh, the battle royale.
Well, historically, I don't usually like to choose my Civs. I like to be surprised when I meet people. But recently, I found that I get Gandhi so much that I have taken to choosing out all of my AI Civs just so I can make sure I don't get Gandhi. There's like the no barbarians option. I'd really like the no Gandhi option.
Yeah, I have long wanted a random except don't give me X, Y, or Z option.
Right, I love that. I would love that. I don't care who you give me, except I don't want these three people. Yeah. I mean, if I have to deal with Yadvega one more time with her religious beating over the head, I'm just going to... No, just kidding.
Question here. Do you still play Civ 5?
No.
No. No. That's going to be a brief answer for a lot of people.
I wasted my money when I bought that game and only played it 3 times.
Yeah, I never did play it much.
Yeah, so Firaxis has got a long history of releasing Civ games that aren't quite good enough. And then after many, many patches and expansions, it becomes a full game that's like pretty decent. But Civ 5 was a bit different because by the time it became a decent game, not long after that, they brought out Civ 6, which had all of that stuff anyway. So it really wasn't a point staying with Civ 5 in any way, shape, or form.
With Civ 4, we had this very long period that even after we got into Civ 5, we were still playing Civ 4 some weekends because was fully matured as a game, basically. You know, we were waiting for Civ 5 to catch up. And then we didn't have a very long period where Civ 5 was good enough that we were wanting to play it all the time before suddenly, boom, Civ 6.
I actually still play Civ 5. Not frequently, but like I'll go in and load a game every once in a while. So.
And then have it installed.
We're definitely in the minority.
Yeah.
I'll tell you my favorite old-time governor story. During Civ 2, I used to play Civ 2, and my father did, all the way across the country from me. And then my sister, who's much younger and was still living with my parents at the time, told me that my dad used to play Civ 2 on his laptop. And when he would go out of town, he would leave the desktop computer playing Civ 2 so that my mom could go in there and hear the governors talking. So then it was like my mom didn't have to miss my dad because she could hear the governors talking to each other. And that was like my dad was still home.
Oh, that's cute.
He played Civ. But yeah, so my sister and my mom used to associate the sound of the governors with my dad playing his little game on the laptop. They had no idea what the game was, but to the governors.
Hopefully they're not annoying advisors like they used to be.
I guess they were advisors then, but
so many faces of Elvis.
That's terrible. Civ 2 advisors.
Call in today.
In North America, 301-637-7659.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Log on to the series' official website at
thepolycast.net.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Are we kind of winding down?
I think so. I think we have exhausted the topics.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fun that we're doing this girls playing Civ again. It's fun to talk to other girls who enjoy the same type of games. Most people don't.
That we exist.
Yeah.
Cover all the facets of my imagination.
There are, in fact, at least 5 of us that are playing this game.
Yes. Despite the running joke on Polycast and Turncast.
There are at least 5 of us who will admit to playing the game in public on the internet, which is not necessarily public.
And go on a podcast.
That's right.
And talk about it.
Using a code name at just kidding. but hey, here we are. I think that's pretty cool. When I sat down for this Christmas special 10 years ago, I was only kind of playing on Settler, kind of just for fun. I think it's been pretty cool to see the way Civ's grown, the way that we've grown as players. I think that's really fun.
Civ 7.
Maybe we could all have PhDs by now, but that's okay. We're having fun.
What we would have gotten at PhD versus what we got out of Civ, I don't know. It's pretty close, honestly.
We learned a lot of history.
I have learned a lot of history from Civilization.
I've learned a lot of history.
My husband kind of despairs at how much of my history knowledge is directly from Civilization. I'm like, but I am learning. He's like,
hey,
well, yeah,
the Civilpedia is like a textbook, guys. I don't know if you've read it lately. My husband reads the Civilpedia for fun. He's weird, but it's been super fun talking with y'all again.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Thanks all so right. much. Have all a right. Merry Festmas, Christmas, Festivus, whatever you're celebrating.
Winter solstice holiday thingamabob.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Internet people, this has been Polycast Christmas Special 2017, Girls Playing Civ number 3. And we're just all going to wish you a very, very happy holiday season, no matter what you're celebrating or not celebrating. That's also cool, too.
Happy playing.
Start singing.
I don't think they're singing aloud in Polycast.
What?
I try to keep that to a minimum. But sometimes
it
just
gets
away.
I don't know what the rules are. There are rules now. This is very complicated.
Yeah. Years of failure have broken Mackie's spirit a little.
I can tell.
What?
God, how old is this podcast now? 15 years?
No, only 10.
It's been a long Close time. Enough.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Every weekend. No Did, no Phil.
I'm sorry, Mackie.
Phil still love the thing.
Yeah.
Isn't he embarrassed that he's like a character that has a catchphrase?
It's so embarrassing to have a catchphrase.
Oh my gosh.
Just
Well, I have to wait for the page to load first. Wake up, laptop.
I've got the page loaded. Do you want me to
pull
up the first question? Okay.
I think that should be part of the loyalty thing. Like, if you know, the longer that city is loyal to you, the less they're going to play Waltzing Matilda, I think.
Or maybe part of the alliance. I will join an alliance with you if you never play that song again. The International Space Station could be something, and then they could have an emergency when it breaks.
Yeah, that would definitely be an emergency.
Opens up new avenues of modding. I don't think they'll have it in the game, but you could totally add Godzilla as an emergency.
Alien invasion.
Bloop.
Sorry.
I know. Which is good because it reminds me to look at Skype.
And I'm going to apologize. I got the dogs in here, by the way.
Oh, click, 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 click.
Yeah.
Wow, guilt trip much?
Sorry.
I work in cartoons. I make children's cartoons, so...
I'm sorry. I didn't mean that being insult. I was just teasing. I was just...
Oh, yeah, totally.
We're all gamers, right? That's why we're here.
Yes. We do other things, but we also game.
Yeah, I'm still at the choosing random civs to start my game.
Gandhi!
Yeah.
Can't have elephants and nukes every game.
What? What do you mean?
Who made that stupid rule?
I think you're wrong.
Yeah, it's like we'll find different ways to play something that they're like, well, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, they have their external test group, but even that's not, I guess, big enough to cover all the variations that people like to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also the question of whether or not they listen to them.
There's that, too. We told you this was going to be a problem. You didn't listen. Oh, it'll be fine. It's just you guys. Yeah, no.
No.
Of course, I think that's probably every external QA group to their publishers or developers ever, but...
My husband is a historian by profession, and he studied, thesis was on the role of women.
We lost her.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear. Just as she was getting to their internet, decided to act up again. Ah! I guess we should officially let the words. That's the thing that's happened in 10 years. I've gotten worse with words.
Are you sure? I recall this from 10 years ago.
Philosophical, damn it. I know how to say it, I swear. Well, Dan will edit it in later.
Record date December 9th, 2017. Music courtesy Just Instrumental Music. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net. We'll be right back.